Tanchi, bonjour. Hello, everyone, to our podcast listeners. We are so happy to be coming back with another episode of Presenting Our Presence. And as you know or may not know, Presenting Our Presence is about highlighting the brilliance, the beauty, the intelligence, the creativity, and the contributions of our Indigenous colleagues here at the University of Alberta. And today, I'm so happy to be co-hosting with Amanda Almond, who was a previous guest on episode 16. If you missed it, go listen to it. It's brilliant and beautiful about our relational ethics and her ties and relationality to the quilts in her family. So do check back on episode 16 for Amanda Almond. And today, she is with us as a co-host. Thank you, Amanda, for joining us today to celebrate and have a conversation with our beloved sister, the colonial self-lover, Squawk goddess, Dr. Lana Whiskey Jack. Lana, thank you for joining us.
Lana Whiskey Jack Nitsigasun, Onyx Kaponitsikotinia, Egwa, Etoskeano Tapasnekia. And a assistant professor in women's and gender studies here at the university. I'm an artist, visual storyteller as well. I hail from, my Utsi connections come from Sad Lake Cree Nation, but first and foremost, I'm an Ausinu Otaski. I'm a human of this earth. So it's great to be here. Me wait then. Hi.
Merci for joining us. We also have Kyle Napier, who is with us. Welcome back, Kyle. You're always with us. So please chime in also in the conversation as you have good relations and know Lana and Amanda very well in your work together. So Amanda, I'm going to pass it to you to launch our first kind of inquiry or question with Lana based on our, you know, preparing for today and her passions and her ways she contributes to the U of A.
Hi, Cindy. Lana, it's so great to be here chatting with you today. We've worked together for some time now, and I'm so excited for you to speak more about what you do at the university. And on that, I wondered if you could start with talking a little bit about your role at the university and what you do there. And also, I had a question today that I was hoping you could speak to specifically about humor in your life, in your work, and all that you do, including at the university.
Yes, thank you. As I mentioned, I'm in the Women's and Gender Department of Women and Gender Studies, and I mainly work with, I'm an artist, a visual storyteller, so I work a lot with art-based practices within as a teaching pedagogy. And of course, I teach through our language. As I am learning language, I am constantly trying to share what I'm learning in that reciprocity, but also making sure I embody what I'm learning through Nehiyawewin, the Cree language. And I do a lot of work around Iskwewewin. As an Esquel, as a woman, as a mother, grandmother, wife, sister, granddaughter, all of those different roles I speak from to help inform and share and teach and learn in a way that's reconnecting myself to this land as being that human of this land. And a lot of my research work is about exploring those different diverse genders and how we express ourselves through not only through our artwork but through our stories as well as through our bodies.
Beautiful, thank you. Can you talk a little bit about why it is important to reclaim Nehiyo understandings of gender, for example?
Absolutely. I mean, it's like, where do we begin, right? I think about all of those beautiful teachings I'm reconnecting to with now, and how how they were such a prevention for disease, how the way we were raised in Wakotuin, it help to develop strong, healthy human beings who were so connected, you know, their body, mind, and spirit and emotions were so connected to this land and cosmos that they can walk with such good health and a clear mind and constantly be in that beauty. Because of course we don't have a word for art, but we had Wawiyasu, that presenting our best self, of constantly being in beauty, because you never knew when the creator was going to call you home. I mean, that's what made life so sacred, is constantly being in that presence of now and connection to the land and listening and, you know, and understanding and learning with the land and with all of our relatives, and of course including our more than human relatives. So when I think about, you know, our many diverse genders, I think about how the importance of how spirit comes first, Atsak, that it wasn't gendered, you know, that spirit is a light, it's love, it's kindness, it's all those teachings we learn in Miopmatswin, in Wakotwin, those laws of that govern good relations. And so gender and sexuality was only, you know, a part of that, having that earthly physical experience on this world. And so the more we connect to those gender diversity, those important medicines that each of those relatives brought, and that we all bring, because in a sense we are all of those different genders, we can switch and go in and out of, you know, that, you know, humor into that, you know, sometimes being that tornado kind of person of messing things up, you know, as an artist, that's what I do all the time, of destroying and recreating. And sometimes we have to do that, especially within these systems of patriarchy and colonization and oppression, is we have to resist and deconstruct and destroy in many times to recreate those spaces. And I love doing that with that, you know, thinking of those grandmothers who prayed for me to be here, prayed for us to be here. You know, they, all the work that they did to survive, just for us to continue and resist and rediscover and reclaim and remember who we are as Aisinuak.
Hi, Lana. I'm going to circle back just to what I was talking about just a little while ago, too. And what role does humor play when we are resisting and deconstructing, and the work that you're doing and the approach that you take in your language reclamation, for example? How does humor play a role in that?
I think it's good to start with that my humor specific to Sad Lake. I think many different nations have different humors and you know, expressions of, you know, some reserve may say nah more than cha or you know, like all of these different whatstagats. But I come from a long line of, you know, what we know now, well, what we call dirty old ladies. And that's where my humor comes from. I, you know, growing up as my grandmother, Caroline Whiskey Jack, who was, I mean, an epic human being and so courageous and strong. But one of what everyone remembers about her was her humor, and that she didn't shy away from difficult conversations. And she used humor as a tool of restoring balance or restoring power within a space or relationships. So humor was used, you know, in a way to be a very powerful grandmother tool, not only to humble, you know, a cousin or humble us as grandkids or her son-in-laws. And, you know, she was really good at putting men in their place through her humor, especially, you know, what we think as dirty humor, but really it's that dirtiness comes from, of course, that Catholicism and those, you know, patriarchal kind of judgments. But for her, that I've learned only in the past, you know, now that I'm going into that next rites of passage of becoming a, being a grandmother and becoming, growing into, you know, one of those new to well, is that humor is a really important part of resisting patriarchy, but also reclaiming our matriarchal values and beauty in a sense as well. So yeah, our humor is beautiful. It's really deadly. If you listen to Crees in a Pod, they have that deadly, you know, awesome matriarchal humor. And of course, we're all related around that area. So there's a very specific type of humor. And that humor I bring into my work, my into these spaces to kind of be one as my protector over my spirit, as my, you know, to laugh, you know, laugh in the face of patriarchy or oppression. kind of tap into that Wisakichuk energy of, you know, sometimes just doing silly things to that we intentionally or unintentionally do to help us learn to be better human beings, to help us teach others as well. So humor, yeah, it's there's so much to unpack on there, but.
I was going to say that I heard a rumor, but I didn't hear a rumor. I was surprisingly recruited to be a member of one of your language groups that is an act of reclamation and has a lot of joy and humor in it. Did you want to talk about that?
Yeah, we were trying to be secret, but people kept like announcing our group in different social events of gatherings. So it was really funny. Yes, we call ourselves Kapapiramiskwak, Laughing Beavers. And we're a group of not only women who are going through that next, that change, that menopause, perimenopausal, but also our elders who are part of that, and some of our Dastawiniwak, our two spirits are a part of this group. And we have some honorary men beavers in our group because they're the ones who really, you know, hold space for a lot of our, our beavers. But a lot of our, you know, taking care and also, of course, being our language mentors as well. But our group, again, like how we use humor as a way to learn the language. There's so much language loss within our communities. And I've been trying to learn language for all of my life. I mean, I've been around Cree. I know a lot of, you know, command words. I know basic conversation, but I was having a really, really hard time remembering. And so I was trying all different kinds of ways. I mean, I attended Blue Quills I worked there for over 12 years. I graduated from there. I took language courses even at University of Alberta, barely passing, you know. And part of it was just the memorization, the way it's taught in classrooms and the way that repeat and, you know, repeat and remember, but it wasn't, that way wasn't working for me. And so I kept thinking of different ways. Of course, art was an important way of learning the language of that through those different visual arts-based practices to help me unpack and learn, you know, those root words of words through my art practices was such an important best practice. But also through laughter. And so the gathering of these matriarchs was really to, I offered protocol to some of my language mentors, asking them if they could teach, because there was a lot of women my age who were becoming grandmothers, and that loss, you know, of feeling, oh my goodness, what kind of cook am I going to be if I don't know the language, if I'm not being able to pass these beautiful teachings and worldview down to remind our Nusamak about, you know, who they are as I seen you and their roles and responsibilities. And so when we had our first gathering, we started in ceremony, and I told them I wanted to learn in humor because it releases so much feel good hormones, and I want to get my body to remember the language. I want that laughter and my nervous system to be comforted and loved and warmed by those words again, you know, because English sure messed us up, you know, and so the warmth that I felt being in those circles with our Nukumak and Nemusumak, I wanted to feel that again and learning with other relatives. And so it's grown, and we play games, like it's total body participatory kind of action. We dance, we sing, we move our bodies to the language, and we just have so much fun. And we always joke that we're learning how to be dirty old Cree woman. and it's helping us to move through our hot flashes and our rage that we feel going through this change.
Lada, I'm over here in my own joy and laughter just listening to you, and that's one of the reasons that I so enjoy working with you. I have one more question to ask, and then I'll pass it off to Cindy or Kyle if they have questions. One of the things you talked about was spirit, which I know is a really important part of everything you do, but specifically working in the university, how do you protect and care for and bring forth spirit? Like I'm thinking, you know, ceremony, humor, language, but it isn't something that necessarily would be overt at the university or nurtured. So how do you nurture and protect your spirit at the university?
Definitely constantly grounding myself through ceremony. And there's so many, you know, the daily ceremonies of smudging or just giving gratitude, gakisumo, or to, you know, my art as that ceremony of going in to connect to spirit, which unfortunately I don't, this is probably my third or fourth time being in my studio in a very long time. And especially then our gathering collective ceremonies through, you know, those circles, through the sharing circles, through, you know, our Matosan, our Nukumtipskau, you know, gatherings around our full moon with our Squewak, or new moons with our other gender diverse. So there's so many different ceremonies that I connect with, depending, of course, on what I need to help me navigate these systems and ground me, because we need that constant reminder of not allowing our minds to be always in protective mode, you know, or that anger as well, which happens when we have to really fight for even just to have ceremony our spaces, to even light a smudge in a classroom, or, you know, so, but it's those exact, you know, act of connections through spirit that helps to ground us and remember, yeah, remember who we are, which is a constant. It's constant. We always have to do that foundational work of awina nia, who am I? Nia oma nia, I am who I am. And so there, that act of just being really thoughtful of being connected to that, those ways and knowing and being through our ceremonies, through our kinship, our wakotoin. That gives me great, having these circles and these conversations, supporting one another is what gives me great, you know, fills my heart.
So beautiful. And so I always appreciate hearing you, Lana, and how you're giving a voice and including the language and teaching and embodying in everything that you're doing. And even as we're in this podcast, and there's so many things that come to mind. I think about, and just seeing you, it's like, language, how it's tied to our health and our well-being, like the humor, your face lights up. It's like, oh, how that would have all helped this whole structure of being our bodies to be well, you know? And yeah, and those strategies with your old ladies, your laughing beaver group, I love it. And what a great teaching about how we would have learned the language also. Right, that would have been like, it's almost like reclaiming that natural way of learning. So in the reclamation, there's this like this joy, this beauty, and this love. So yeah, just kind of almost rethinking about intersectional. You know, sometimes I think about the critiques on intersectional theory from an Indigenous feminist lens, and it's like, it's like love, it's joy, it's beauty, it's humor, it's truth, and that's how we can start thinking. Anyway, that's kind of the pieces I'm making in terms of making those ties to what does intersectional health and well-being look like from that perspective. And so, yeah. And thank you for taking us into your studio. Oh my goodness. So appreciating the gifts of your creativity there that are part of our conversation as well. Other few things, but I'm going to ask Kyle, I know you and Kyle have done also some incredible work together over the last couple of years. So Kyle, let's hear from you.
Almost a decade, it feels like. Yeah, getting there. Yeah, since what, 2015? So yeah, I've been working together relationally, building together and supporting language revitalization and reclamation and work and even decolonizing our own research practices and our own conduct, you know, when we're going into community but wearing a, you know, bringing you Alberta logo or whatever on a paperwork, what does that mean? And how can we actively decolonize our practice and be true to our own values and conduct and protocols? So I guess that's what I want to ask you about is how would you view the overlap in like conduct and protocol in the academy compared to like conduct and protocol, because you run, of course, Whiskey Jack Art House. What is it like working with artists and artist conduct and protocol contrasted with working with community with the researcher hat?
That's a good question. As an artist and a curator of, you know, working with artists, is that we're definitely our own type of gender, in a sense, our own type of tribe. we're very fluid people, and so our minds think differently, and it's a different way of working with our you know, our creators, destroyers, our you know, visual storytellers. And so definitely takes how would I say When I think about like working in the academy and the difference with that, with there's a lot more different structure with working with artists. It's a lot more fluid. You know, you're dealing with all kinds of stories unraveling in a sense. And I have to speak about it in a metaphor because just the diversity in our different for our artists, and because they're constantly being in a creative mode, they are, to me, they're always working in it within different spiritual, physical realms, right? Where working in the academy is just physical, mental. But when you're working with artists, you're working with emotional and spiritual. And so those are two different types of energies to navigate. And so the protocols in approaching them, of course, you know, with the academy, you have paperwork, you have policies, you have, but with working with our artists, you have, that's where our Wakotuin, all of those laws come into approaching our artists and working within that space of co-learning, of co-mentoring, and of being vulnerable in a sense to walk into those different spaces, because you never know. I know it's kind of a little bit more abstract, but I like it's hard to articulate that different energy with which our artists work in. And I can see why, you know, how art is such a powerful resistance as well as a teacher, because the metaphors that we use to share stories are profound and so multi-layered. And so I think, yeah, how I'm constantly being in between, and it's something, that's why I'm so arts-based. It's like, this is what I know, this is the language I can speak. And it's my ceremonial bundle to work within that, like my art tools is part of my bundle of being in between those spaces. So, and I know that for so many of our artists, like they're powerful beings that are working within those different realms.
What you remind me of, Lana, in your articulating kind of navigating both spaces is also, I think what's important that artists bring within the academy is disrupting how we produce knowledge. Right, like you're saying, it's hard to articulate. Imagine that it's hard to articulate that are those approaches or ways of thinking and be in a book chapter or in a paper, right? And so there are so many other ways in which that we can think about knowledge making or knowledge creating and through the arts. And so I want to acknowledge that, because I think that increasingly we are, you know, we started a project on research creation. Like, it's kind of going outside of these traditional ways of how we think knowledge has to be shared, communicated, given a voice to. And so I think it's so important to also speak about that in our roles in the academy as kind of going between both, but increasingly making that as legitimate, as a valid way to give a voice to what we want to give a voice to those experiences, to those complexities that can't be only expressed in the English language in an academic paper in so many ways. And so how that is a powerful way of interrupting as well, right? And interrupting with that, like you said, even the language has a resonance that interrupts. Even the language interrupts. The images interrupt. The love interrupts, right? The beauty interrupts. And what an exquisite way to think about also interrupting. Yes, we need protests and we need those things. We need many ways to interrupt, right? So anyway, those are the things that come to mind in listening and reflecting on the power of arts-based, what we call arts-based. And I remember when I was up in the Mushkwagwak territory working with artists, not as a traditional artist for some sense, but I asked a language keeper, how do you say artist in the language? And he says, well, firstly, artist is not even in the language, which was just so wonderful to hear. And there was, you know, quite a few of us sitting there. And he says, it's the one who reflects you know, and I, that always stuck with me. That always stayed with me in terms of even interrupting how we think about art and artists in that sense, from the perspective. And I don't remember what the term was in the language, in the Umashquegwak language, but the description of it always stayed with me. And yeah, and I carry that teaching, you know? So yeah, merci for, we could probably keep visiting and having so many threads to keep pulling on and weaving on. But I want to say, yeah, thank you for that, those teachings, and for sharing. And Amanda, Kyle, is there anything else? Or you, Lana? We have a few more minutes left in our podcast. And if there's any kind of final thoughts or reflections or questions that you want to share.
I think just kind of tying both like the laughter, the art of laughing, the art of visual storytelling, the art of community engaged work, you know, is that when we're in our intimate spaces or finding our circle where we can fully be ourselves and expressing ourselves, of sharing and lifting this our own spirit, but the spirit of others, is such an important way of self-love and to care. But it's also a way of protection. Like when we talk about building courageous spaces, or you know, my grandmother's laughter as that tool of protection, you know, it's really you know, through laughter, that tone, that sound, that travels, just like singing does, it is a release, but it also communicates to others, you know, that when you're laughing, you are in your autonomy, you are in your power, you know? And so I feel like I've used laughter in many different situations, from, you know, from defending myself from racism, from, you know, laughing at, you know, attempts of some kind of violence. Laughter has been a really important part of that protection. And so I think about, you know, the work that we do in our community, laughter has been a part of actually being able to speak about really, really difficult things, from gender to sexual violence. We are able to talk about through these really, you know, serious, you know, very triggering and very, but it's through laughter that we're able to liberate ourselves and unload that heaviness from shame, from guilt, from, you know, that these patriarchal and very colonized systems have ingrained in us. So I think, you know, when I think about laughter, that importance that we really connect to our laughter, like we connect to learning how to cry again, connecting to how do we laugh again, so that we're not carrying so much of this colonial BS. You know, I'm like, what's a nice way of saying this, but I can't find another English word that expresses that. So if I can bring at least one student laughing, you know, in some of our very difficult conversations, I feel like I've accomplished some good colonial restructuring, renovating, decolonial renovating through laughter and arting. Thank you. Hi.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for reminding us of the importance of laughter and humor in many different ways to consider it. For your teachings, for your gift, for all our listeners. So many things to sit with that we will continue to have tea over, as Kyle often says. So merci for joining us, Lana, and of course Amanda and Kyle, and look forward to laughing, more laughter and more love and more beauty and joy in everything that you do and everything that we're all doing together collectively. So merci.